welcome to the latest edition of the Roots Aviation Podcast. My name is Wesley Charnock and I'm the Managing Editor here at Roots. And today we're going to bring you another live interview from Roots Silk Road 2019 in Nur-Sultan, Kazakhstan.
Hi there, I'm David Casey. I'm the online editor at Roots. And as Wes said, we've got an exclusive interview from Roots Silk Road and we're joined by Captain Thomas Hallam, who is the CEO of Somon Air.
At the time of recording, Somon Air are the only carrier based in Tajikistan offering scheduled service. And Captain Hallam tells us more about their plans to connect the capitals of Central Asia.
He also discusses how the airline plans to add some wide bodies to its fleet before the end of the year to make it more competitive on Russian routes.
Captain Hallam was interviewed live on stage by Yolanta Strakitsa, the director of Strakitsa Consulting. In a moment, we'll hand over to Yolanta, and we really hope you enjoy this podcast. And if you do, please don't forget to like and subscribe on our iTunes or Google Play channels.
Hope you enjoy. Here's the interview.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome once again Captain Thomas W. Hallam II.
Thank you. Thank you, Yolanta. That's a very nice introduction. I'm impressed myself when I look back that far.
Good. Okay, so, Thomas, Somon Air. What's in the name?
Well, Somon Air is a reflection of the leader of the country, the Somoni, of the 7th century emperor of Tajikistan. And he's really viewed now as the current leader, the leader of freedom. There's a statue of him in the city. So the currency is called Somoni, which is a direct reflection of his name. And the airline is called Somon Air. So it's a privately run airline versus the national airline. And so I think that our founders wanted to, you know, identify clearly with the Tajik culture, and the level of independence that they feel within that country.
Right. Very interesting. Very interesting. So leadership, yes, I guess, that's in the name.
Yes.
So are you really a leading airline? So what is your strategy?
Well, I think we are a leading airline. First is, you know, we're one of only two airlines in the country, and right now the only operating airline. Tajik Air ceased its operations temporarily, but we are the only true international airline. So we fly outside of the CIS countries to Europe, to the Middle East, to Turkey, and to China. And so we do that with the full authorizations of that type of a network. So my job is to come to the airline and allow it to not only be a leader but sustain its leadership by being sure that it's properly maintained in the areas of safety, security, and meeting the international practices. So that's really where I began to be focused. If I may, I think when I first accepted the job, I had to sit and talk with the board of directors. And, well, I think that I needed to know more from them what their idea was for the airline. You know, at this stage of my life in aviation, I have to choose carefully, you know, how I want to complete it. And I was very interested from them. And one of the things that they said to me, which is a bit of a reflection of IATA's current philosophy, is that they needed this freedom of borders. Here you have Tajikistan. Jordan Karamalakov talked earlier about landlocked region. Well, you know, Tajikistan is the smallest region of this region, and it's particularly landlocked, and it's been affected by borders of Uzbekistan for many years, Afghanistan to the south, you have China to the east, and incidentally, 25 years ago, there were restrictions on the borders between Uzbekistan and Tajikistan. And where there were 20 daily flights 25 years ago, for those next 25 years, there were none. So as you could see, that their interest is to be able to reach out beyond those geographical borders and fly to better destinations, making sure Europe and the Middle East are open for business, but for educational reasons as well, and be able to take their citizens to places where they could really learn and see a different way. Later on, maybe bring people there. So that's sort of our strategy.
Yeah, let me just touch on what you just said. Yeah, landlocked country. Used to be many routes, now I guess a bit less routes. But leadership airline. So how that two works together? How the leadership airline increased these routes? Are you guys really increased routes between Uzbekistan and Tajikistan or any other markets you just named? Or what is in specific?
Well, yes, I think, you know, we've just opened up our flight markets between Uzbekistan and Tajikistan. Someone actually flew the first flight between those two countries in 25 years. Now you have visa issues and you have all of those things which we've been able to resolve over time so that they're much more relaxed in the ability to fly for both citizens of both. Now I have to remember that there are probably twice as many Tajiks living in Uzbekistan as there are in Tajikistan because those borders were artificially drawn. And so once you lock out those families, it becomes increasingly difficult for those families to reach up and meet with each other. So now that has been relaxed, that's a much clearer reuniting. We have working programs with Uzbek Airways, which we're now working with. They have an MRO that's going to help service our aircraft. Those have been very positive things. We are looking at opening up flights into Kyrgyzstan, into Bishkek. And my view would be, and we already have flights into Almaty.
But you don't have flights here.
We don't have flights here.
Well, that's bad.
We'll call that yet. But, I mean, you know, it's a matter of allocating resources, and it's a matter of our strategy. Let me talk a little bit about that first, if you don't mind. So my first goal was to say, if we're going to operate not just in the CIS countries but outside, we have to do what? We have to be an IOSA certified airline, which we received in 2016. That was the year that I took over as the CEO. We've since received IOSA certification 3 times. So that's significant. It's not only that you achieve it, but you sustain it, and that's critical. And that's
exactly what sustain.
Yes.
I think that's what's very important. And how this strategy that unlocks the region sustains what you've done. You said that you took the business in 2016?
Yes.
So how that sustains this strategy? So what this area?
Well, if I understand your question, and so we received the certification in 2016. Now, what that does is it tells you and it tells the world that you're a safe operating airline, a very safe operating airline. Now, you have to be, if you want to operate into Europe and if you want to operate into the Middle East or Turkey, you have to be able to demonstrate that. So the next step is that into Europe, you have to get authorization from the third country operator, EASA. And so those certifications allow that. So we have now that followed with the EASA TCO authorization. And then my personal push is then now we must become an IATA member. Which we did in 2017. So as you see you become a safe airline, you get your authorizations, but then you begin to network and be part of and be brought into the culture of a safely operating airline by networking with people. We started as a point-to-point airline, Dushanbe to Moscow, migrant traffic. Why are you surprised? You're not. And it's point to point, and then we go from Moscow to St. Petersburg to all of the other destinations there. A few local routes, but mostly that's what it is. Well, the migrant traffic is changing. First is that it starts as seasonal, but now they're becoming better workers, more educated workers. They have more opportunities. They're staying longer in Russia. They're not maybe traveling quite as often. And other people are trying to pick up on that market.
Sorry, can I catch you again? Are you saying that the Somon Air is the airline that looks for outbound traffic from Tajikistan?
Rephrase that so I understand your question.
Do you say that Somon Air is the airline that mostly cater after outbound?
Yes, I would say so. Okay. Yes, absolutely. But my strategy is to move our dependency away from the strictly Russian migrant traffic point to point.
That's good.
So that's too seasonal. It's unpredictable, and the competition is beginning to take parts of that. And I could maybe calculate the day where Somon Air would never be very profitable, if at all. And the only way to do that is to utilize the memberships of IATA to start code-sharing and interline agreements that allows us to move away from the point-to-point traffic. That was very successful. Our very first code-share arrangement and interline agreement was with Atlas Global in Turkey. And that was in 2018. And it was very successful. Surprisingly successful, and I think so on both sides. We did it a bit of as an experiment, and we weren't set up particularly well to connect our reservation systems to that, but we had this ambition to do that. And once that was established, and even though we didn't do things as digitally as we would have liked to, we're in that position now. What happened was that we were able to increase a third frequency to Istanbul, and our load factors went skyrocketing. We were able to help them in an ACMI agreement. There were other things that, you know, it showed that partnerships can shift from dependencies. And if I look back at that, I could see that was our first very successful step. Now we've just met recently in Istanbul to talk about furthering that agreement and to grow it in the positive way.
Can I just?
Yep, please.
Is the Atlas Global guys here? Are you happy with Somon Air? Of course. Yeah, that's very good.
He gave the right answer for my speech anyway.
That's what I want to make sure that.
Yeah. No,
good.
I think so.
Good. Perfect. Perfect.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay.
So, ladies and gentlemen, take the opportunity. Somon Air is here, yeah? So airports and airlines who want to do a code share, just grab your seat because the partnership is successful. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, this is good.
Let me just, again, touch slightly the topic you mentioned with Tajikistan is a landlocked country and you want to open it. You member for IATA, you're doing new agreements. But these destinations you have at the moment, how do you want to change them? Do you want to reposition them? Or are you happy with existing destination? If you continue on that as well and touch particulars already, just be a bit more specific of what routes you will be looking for in the future and how you happy with existing.
Yeah. Let's first lay the groundwork. I mean, we're a small airline. We could be big for Tajikistan, but we're ambitious. So we're operating 6 aircraft, and so we're looking for more aircraft. We're looking to move away from the strictly narrow-body 737 operation into two portions. One is the wide-body aircraft, and then also to the smaller narrow-body regional jet aircraft. So you know that absorbs a tremendous amount of our time. But without that ability, certain expansions of our routes aren't going to work. So first is, if you look at the 737, we're already load limited from Dushanbe to Moscow. I mean, not to Moscow, but to Frankfurt. And so we need an aircraft that can fly that and at full capacity, or to go even beyond that distance. So if you look at that distance, it takes all the east, Seoul, Korea, Shanghai, Bangkok, Beijing, they're out of the picture with the current aircraft.
But that's not enough Tajiks to fly from Dushanbe to these destinations. And you said that you're mainly in outbound traffic.
Yeah, no. We are encouraging inbound traffic. So that's why I wasn't sure of your question when you first mentioned it. The last year was the year of tourism, and as announced by the president of our country, and so they've made a very clear commitment that tourism is a high priority for the country. So we're now working with agencies outside of the country that want to attract tourists. The Koreans, for example, are quite interested in that. So there are other destinations that are as well. We also have the ability of doing charter operations too, which allows us seasonally to move people to different destinations like Antalya and maybe to Kuala Lumpur or some other places like that, Bangkok especially. So you know, we have the ability to both service as a scheduled airline and service as a charter airline. We're looking at maybe adding some destinations in Europe that would I think one of the key points is trying to maybe service through Baku on Fifth Freedom Rights, that would take us on perhaps to Amsterdam. That would open up a route to Baku and it'll allow us to continue on to Amsterdam. We tried to do that into Frankfurt. They offered us a Fifth Freedom to Frankfurt, but the German government wouldn't allow that. So okay, we have ambitions. They're high, they're big, and sometimes we just stay determined and keep pushing on till we get that.
Yeah. Good ambitions, big ambitions, and still you canceled your 747 order.
Well, that was the news had it that way. That was a little bit of editor license, I think. There was an article in Forbes magazine.
You don't cancel them,
no, we haven't canceled it. So the Forbes article, which was a good article by a very good journalist and one who I respect a lot. We had a nice talk about where we were. I think the headline of it was that we canceled the order, but we really didn't. If we look back at the history of that, when the MAX became the big problem, we had just signed a lease agreement on that aircraft. So we had not taken delivery of the MAX aircraft. But obviously, we weren't going to fulfill financial requirements on an aircraft that had just been grounded globally. We had no idea what was the future of it. We had already invested some money in it, and so our board of directors decided that we were going to say, look, this letter has been stopped, suspended, I would call it more, and then we'll wait and see. So The issue with the MAX is that, from our side, is that if we're the only operator of this aircraft in the country, and this aircraft has a very negative appeal within this part of the region, we have internal problems on making this selection. So for the FAA and EASA to certify the airplane and say, fine, it's okay to fly and it's perfectly safe, and I would agree with that assessment, I have to come back and convince the ministries and the president and all the authorities that it is indeed, you know, safe to do because there's been so much bad press. So when that comment came up in the interview, my point to him was, we'll need time for that airplane to start flying, for the press to become good again, to balance the negative press with the positive press before we can go back and say, now we're ready. So this aircraft was to be delivered to us in August, or actually the first delivery is supposed to be at the 1st of June. And, of course, that was too soon. Now it's August. Now we don't know when those deliveries are going to take place. But you have to take certain steps to do that. The MAX is an important aircraft for our fleet, because of the economies of it, because it matches our 737, and is something. I've been to Seattle at the first meeting of pilots and instructors that were introduced by their flight operations to show the correction of the MAX software program. I met with the operators of United Airlines and American Airlines, who operated large fleets. I know some of these people quite well from my previous experience. We all agree that Boeing will find a satisfactory fix for it.
So how are you going to achieve your strategy then? You were supposed to have an airplane in June. No, it's not here. You're supposed to have an airplane in August. Not here. And now you don't know when you will have airplanes. And you still commit to Maxis, and you have a strategy.
Yeah, well,
you know, attract inbound traffic.
Okay, so we're still out looking for some wide-body aircraft because we can still compete with the Russian market in a wide-body aircraft. Most of the Russian are competing with us with 767s, and we have 737s. So, you know, they determine the seat price to the country. So if we can go back and compete with the 767, we will do that. We have other challenges in Tajikistan, fuel costs and other things like that. You know, that's kind of a different subject. But what it's allowed us is to change our focus and say, now is the time to maybe look at the 767 wide-body fleet and try to do that. We've been very active in that. I don't have anything to announce yet, but I'm expecting we will announce something soon on that. We've had a very good offer relationship with Embraer for some E2 190s.
Some rumors last year, I believe.
Yeah, they were, and they didn't really quite materialize. You know, it's we have to be slow and deliberate and you know, move ahead, but we're continuing to move ahead. So I would like to see probably this year and early next year some wide bodies in our fleet, in 2020 and 21, some regional jets in our fleet, and then be back into talking the MAX operation sometime next year and beyond.
Very interesting, I guess challenging, despite enjoying a monopoly, I would say, slightly.
Well, the monopoly is temporary, you know.
Everything temporary is the most permanent.
Yeah, you know, Tajik Air ceases operations in the first part of the year. You know, there's two parts to that. That means we're the only operating airline. But the other part is that we didn't turn our back on the passengers that were depending upon the Tajik Air flights. And so, you know, we carried a lot of those flights free of charge in order to be sure that our citizens got to different destinations.
Being a monopoly, you can afford to take.
Well, you're a monopoly if you're getting money for everything that you do, but if you're giving it away. So I mean, it has an impact. But I think that, you know, we just don't view it as monopoly. We have our growth plan. We still don't have the numbers of aircraft that we would like, nor do we have the utilization we'd like. So we're still in a position to grow. And also, look, Tajikistan is not a wealthy country, and it's with the price of fuel. It's very difficult to keep those prices low and affordable to that. So we're always having to be conscious of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, being a headhunter, I have to ask you, how do you manage your staff? Because recruiting is one thing, but retention, keeping people, making sure people come and work or developed and work in a company for a long time is a challenge. And we already heard in the previous sessions that local training need to be increased and management need to look farther beyond the existing technologies, HR technologies, especially with the coming AI and the digitalization. So how do you manage your team?
Well, you know, I was fortunate to inherit a pretty good team when I took over. One of my predecessors came from Aristana. He had been a former CEO at Aristana. He brought with him some very good and qualified people. He invested a lot of money in training for local staff. And so when I came...
You had hunted him.
Huh?
You had hunted him.
No. He came before me. That's what I'm saying. And so he did it. He did a lot of the, you know, early work for me. So when I came, I had some pretty qualified people. I brought in my own leadership team in flight operations and quality and safety and flight services, but we operate with a limited number of expat leadership. Most of it is local. This is a private company. Their interest is in developing local talent, and their commitment is to doing that. So I've been able to attract people here, but you know, there's two parts of keeping someone. The people that I know personally are at the ends of their careers. that's, you mentioned my 48 years, you know, not everybody wants to stay in that business as long. And so I ask them to come for 1 or 2 or 3 years and, you know, give me their best, and they do that. So the long term is I'm hoping to develop that expertise within the local leadership. There's two things that I think are important. I look for people that think conceptually rather than through memorization or rote. So if I find a person that thinks conceptually and can reason conceptually, I can train that person. The other element that I'm looking for is that they're a team player and that that they're honest. So, you know, once I have those elements in place, I can train or have people train. And I've been quite successful with that, both in the commercial department in particular. I still keep expat positions available for quality and safety, because I think that comes from a real clear technical expertise from outside of the industry. And I'm actually looking for a flawed operations director. So if you're the headhunter,
if anyone wants to work for someone there, you've just been invited.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Let's talk slightly in what someone air is looking to get from the airports. So what would be your proposition or what would be your request to airports of your future destination?
Well, I think it's, you know, to me, the since I don't personally deal with the airports quite so much except when there are problems. Yeah, you know, we need good contracts and we need good handling services. I mean, this is all about that. First is we're accountable under the IOSA certification process, and we properly handle contracts, and we can be sure that they're self-governing and they meet our standards, and that when we come to make a visit, you know, that what we're seeing is what we're really getting. So I think that we need the reliability of the airports to meet the standards and the contracts that we want, to handle our passengers properly, to handle our baggage properly. I think there's, you know, a general awareness that there's, you know, this region is a little bit difficult. There's a lot of personal business, you know, done at every level, if I can.
And, every region has it.
Okay, and every region has that. So, you know, we can't, as an airline, control that with my staff. It has to be, you know, controlled at that airport level in some way.
But would you agree that without the good partnership, very good relations with your airport partners, your destination will not be successful?
That's my whole point, is that that's what we're looking for. So we're looking that we have to have that relationship. We have to have trust that they'll deliver it properly, that their customer experience, of course, is generated by that personal contact at that airport just as much, more than probably, you know, you can resolve a lot of things on a flight by making them more happy, but if they come in to the airplane angry, you have a lot of work to do to get them happy by the time they land.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Fully agree. Ladies and gentlemen, in about 5, 7, maximum 10 minutes time, I will open floor for questions. So please think about what do you want to ask Tom. Perhaps you want to get a very short 2-minute speech to Tom from your airport or your airline to do a partnership with someone air. So think about it while I want to get closer into Tom as an individual, because he's a fascinating gentleman, isn't it? He's such a knowledgeable and such an interesting figure. So we kind of learn what someone air is about, but who is Captain Thomas W. Hallam II?
Well, I can see how you've grown to the position that you're in. Thank you. It's a very flattering introduction. I don't know that I can make it that fascinating. But, of course, as I told you, I've been involved in aviation since 1971 when I joined the U.S. Air Force. Before then, my father was a military pilot, and he actually set up the Greek Air Force training program for the NATO aircraft, the F-5, back in the 60s. So I grew up in this whole area of training and of flying. I have three brothers who were also pilots, and all fighter pilots and all commercial pilots. They retired from American, United, Continental, Northwest Airlines.
So staff, you call your brothers.
Yeah, if I need advice, I've had plenty of advice from them all my life. I'm the only one still, I think, in management. I have a brother who's still instructing, two brothers instructing. One actually in Kabul is instructing for the Embraer Corporation. So we're still quite active in that. A couple of things about it. You know, I learned to fly as a young man in fighter aircraft, and so the ability to take an aircraft from takeoff to 30,000 in 3 minutes is a pretty exciting thing for a man of 22 years old. I can remember taking off Bangor, Maine. It was about 30 degrees below zero, and by the time the runway was 11,300 feet. And I was airborne in 1,000 feet, and by the time I reached 30,000 feet, I rolled over, and the airport was directly underneath me. So it was like, wow, this is the ultimate. Well, you know, what happens at 20 doesn't last for the next 40 years. So, but I enjoyed my fighter experience. That's really where I learned to perfect my skills of flying, of precision flying. When I joined the Delta Airlines in 78, I soon became involved in the teaching and instruction, and I was a line check captain on the international routes out of New York to Moscow, Istanbul, to Central Europe. So I saw the world as a pilot, but as an instructor. And as an instructor, you shift from the importance of learning to the importance of teaching. And there's always that period of time of where you're a little bit insecure in both, right? Yeah. But finally, if you do it long enough, you get secure in the teaching part. And I think that's really where I began to hone my skills that I can bring to my job today. So I did that for 28 years. All the time, as I told you before, I'm a musician. I'm a trained violinist. I started an orchestra. I played in an orchestra for 15 years, and I got into orchestra management. I saved a professional symphony orchestra in Massachusetts from bankruptcy, and I did a lot of things that are skills that I now have to apply to the airlines, people skills, human skills. And so when I retired, I decided to continue to fly because my love for flying. I went to Ethiopia for a year, was the first expat hired there in 30 years. So it was a kind of a landmark thing for me and a big responsibility. I learned a lot in Ethiopia flying with those pilots. And that same group that brought me to Ethiopia brought me to Air Astana. So I spent 4.5 years at Air Astana where I started as a pilot, and they brought me into management. And that's where I really started to focus all of my skills to say, how can I change and make change and be productive from what I know? It was difficult for me because I had to learn a whole different way. But I did end up running their number two in their flight operations when I left. But I also developed their training department at Air Astana. So moving it out of flight operations into an independent. A headhunter called me when I went back to the U.S. and said, how about Tajikistan? So if I hadn't had a good experience in Air Astana and Kazakhstan, I would never have come back to Tajikistan. But that's where I am.
Yes, but you saw once the runway upside down, so why not Tajikistan, I guess?
That's right. I mean, you know, it's all part of that. People ask me, how do you get from New York to Moscow or to whatever with all those changes and all those procedures and all that? And, you don't think about that. You just think about, okay, I got to go here and I got to end up there. And you just envision that. And that's the way I take my role at Tajikistan. You know, don't worry about the complexities. Don't worry about the challenges. Don't worry about the things that people say, you can't do that or that'll never happen. just think, okay, where do you want to take it? And start.
Yeah, well, in Russian, there's a saying, "Glaza боятся, руки делают." The eyes are afraid, the hands are doing. That's a proverb. Yeah. I think that's about you.
Yes, okay. That's well, about you. Probably so.
Very interesting. One small remark. Recently, I've been in Paris, showing Le Bourget, and there was a fighter aircraft flying up, and there were so many commercial pilots who were saying like this, walking up. Because all the commercial pilots really think that one day they can fly a proper plane, firefighting plane. They were so, their faces was kind of missing the beat. So yeah. you understood, you know both sides.
I do, but I sit up there with them and I still look and I say, boy, I'd like to be up there doing that. So it's a thrilling experience. And, you're lucky if you can do it in your lifetime, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, your time. Who is first? Questions? Jordan, please.
Now it's going to get tough. I got Jordan on the line here.
No, not tough, but challenging. Fantastic biography, fantastic experience. It's amazing. I must conclude that last month, Thomas elected as the second in the history member of IATA nomination board after the CEO of Air Astana, Peter Foster, was a few years ago elected in the same body. So it is recognition for this fantastic, famous person. IATA likes Tom Hallam very much, not on regional, but on worldwide level. We appreciate that you are with us, Tom.
Thank you.
My question is, related with IATA. 2 months ago, following your initiative, supported by Air Astana and other carriers, you hosted a fantastic meeting in Dushanbe, between CEOs of all airlines in Central Asia. It was Uzbekistan Airways, Aviatraffic from Bishkek, Kazakh Air, and SCAT from Kazakhstan. It was a very interesting meeting, first time in history. All CEOs of those carriers, all the time competing to each other, sit around the table and talking about the common issues we have here. I believe that this initiative will continue because we have common issues we need to fight or to work on them together. But I wonder now, you reported now the good success of your co-chair agreement with Atlas Airlines from Turkey, am I right?
Yes.
Interesting. Why we do not have still no one even co-chair agreement between airlines in Central Asia? Of course, competition is good stuff, but we are so ethnic related around. We have so common tourist targets to achieve around. And will you elaborate what you, from your point of view, need to do more? And what do you expect from your partners in neighbor countries to increase the cooperation, to increase frequencies, and by this to stimulate inter-Central Asian traffic, ethnic and touristic, and by this to improve the whole level of aviation in our region? Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Jordan. I appreciate that. That was a great question because it's really part and parcel to our strategy, simply one that I didn't take the time to address here. I've always wanted, when I talked about developing regional traffic, this is what personally Salmon Air or I have for Salmon Air in mind, connecting at least the capital cities, right, of these countries because As the woman who spoke earlier about how long it took her to get from Hong Kong, it may take twice as long to get from Dushanbe to somewhere in Central Asia, because you know the traffic just isn't there. But part of that's borders, and we know that from Uzbekistan, and visas and those issues. Part of it's the way of doing business. Part of it's airports. So I think we've started to open those doors. It'd be my goal to greatly increase the connectivity. Part of what I hope to and what I discussed with IATA, and you were part of those discussions, about bringing the Central Asian airlines and the CEOs together, was to begin that process of working together. Because, you know, I think that there's interest in co-chairs, maybe not, on a day-to-day basis where you're focused on your own operation. But I think that the more we're working together and talking together, the more we can really see and understand where we can best complement each other to bring this connectivity about. And we've had conversations with Scott. We've had conversations with Aristana, and we started that, actually. We started conversations at the CEO roundtable back a few months ago with Aristana on that. There was a lot of interest and talk from Aviatraffic about that. So I think it's a matter of time. And one is that the initiative is strong. This is a focus that we want to do. But we also know that there are challenges within the region, just between visas, traffic rights, politics, I guess. I'm not certain about that challenges. But I think that's very high on our focus. And I'm hoping that I can bring that to the table. And we should talk about it. I mean, the roundtable activity started, I think, in March. We're looking to have our second meeting in November, which would hopefully be here at Astana in Kazakhstan, and then share those meetings with the other. That incidentally, the membership of that committee is either you have to be applying to for an IOSA certification, or you have to be an IOSA certified airline, or you have to be an IATA member airline. So with that, we're hoping that we'll have more people want to join into that process. As airlines begin to grow, they see the value of being a safe airline, being a member airline, and continuing on like that. So I think that's my hope, is next year would be a different, and you'd answer my question for me. Thank you.
I hope so. Inshallah.
Inshallah.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I would say from a consulting point of view, we do business with Central Asia for many years by now, and with Kazakhstan, particularly with Samruk Casino and the aviation companies for like 80 years. Well, I would fully support what you just said.
Yes.
You really need much better connectivity internally. And with the company, we will fully support you as well. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we have time for one-ish question or pitch. Airports. I see you guys. I miss a hand, really. Okay, going once, going twice. Right, then I have a time. It's my time. Good. Now.
I was about to say Saved by the Bell, but I guess not, huh?
Okay, very last thing. We talk about past, we already spoke about future, we spoke about current challenges and opportunities, but let's look beyond. Let's look, say, in about 10, 15, 20, even perhaps 30 years' time. All of these new gadgets, artificial intelligence, people, young people, extremely bright young people that live differently. Yep. Than our generation live. And how do you see them being passengers of Somon Air? How this new digitalized, something very different AI type Somon Air will look like?
Well, I'm lucky to be caught up in the digital world myself at this point. So if you'd asked me that 5 years ago, I would have predicted something that never would have happened today. But I think what's amazed me, I mean, the smart handheld devices now have revolutionized the ability for countries that are less developed to join this highly digitized world. And so I think you can see clearly that there's a lot of investment in that. There's a lot of focus on that. And airlines that have old, tired systems are having to redo themselves. So we're fortunate that we're, you know, we're just wanting to step into the digital world ourselves. And we would do it anyway, even if it wasn't this great opportunity, because we have to do something. So we think that we can be part of that force going forward to do that. Only 20% of the population of Tajikistan is tied to the internet. So we're forced a little bit already, you know, though we're doing online ticketing and all that, that's in the early stages, we're still tied to the old system of agencies and things like that.
But then you wouldn't in 2030.
But no, we wouldn't. But we fortunately, I mean, our challenge is to get with what's happening versus get rid of, you know, we're not burdened by something we already have committed to. We can move on a little quickly. One of the things that we remarked, I know people talked earlier about 2022 and 2020, whatever, different things. But one of the points that interested me the most was at IATA has their economic forecast is that in 2037, the global economic center, which is moving from west to east, will lay right over the top of Dushanbe.
Okay.
Now, we're not driving it. But we're sure going to take advantage of it.
Sultan would claim that's there, the center.
Okay. I mean, you know, so China and India and those are driving those things. But we cannot, you can't, it's like a tidal wave. You can't get out of its way. And so we have to be prepared on that, and we will meet those challenges, and it's much to our advantage.
Well, I hope you agree that was an insightful interview with one of the most interesting characters in aviation in the region. As ever, we'll be back in 2 weeks, where we'll bring you another interview from Route Silk Road 2019.
If you enjoy the Roots Aviation podcast, don't forget to like and subscribe on iTunes or Google Podcasts, where you can also listen to our extensive back catalogue. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time.